The Money Show.
Investment School.
Investment School brought to you by Alexander Forbes Investments. Their multi-managed portfolio solutions give you a simpler, smoother and safer investment journey. For more information, visit alexanderforbes.co.za. Well, headmaster in the Investment School this evening is Dino Zuculo. Now, Dino is a fund manager at Westbrook Alternative Asset Management, on the line to us this evening from Joburg. I mean, just give me a sense of it, if you would, Dino. Alternative investments. Are you talking about dodgy cryptocurrency trading platforms, shoddy artworks? I don't know. What other dodgy things can I think of? But what's an alternative investment if it's not something slightly dodge?
Yeah, good evening, Bruce. Thanks for having me, and good evening to everyone listening. I mean, it's all the question. What is an alternative? And, you know, you hear more and more speak around alternative investing and different alternative assets. And you're right. It's a word that I don't particularly like that much, Bruce, because alternatives can be associated with things that are, you know, a little bit risky and a little bit shoddy and shady. But the truth is that the world of alternative investing is an $11 trillion asset class globally. And simply put, Bruce, investing in alternative assets means making an investment in something different, in anything that is different to the traditional investment markets. Now, the traditional investment markets, simply put, incorporates listed bonds, listed equities, so debt or equity instruments that you can buy on a listed exchange, or traditional collective investment scheme portfolios. But I think, Bruce, the world that we live in at the moment is one where, you know, equities and asset prices in general are high. And there's a heck of a lot of volatility that's going on, especially in the listed markets around COVID and, you know, economic and political uncertainty. Certainly, we've got a lot of it here in South Africa. And as a consequence, there's this big move to investing in alternatives. Now, what are alternatives? I'll give you a few examples. Where buying a listed bond on an exchange is the vanilla. The making of a private loan would be considered the alternative. Where buying a, you know, a listed equity stock, let's say in a property company, would be the vanilla. The making of a direct property acquisition would be the alternative. Traditional collective investment schemes can be compared perhaps to hedge funds. So there's a whole world of alternatives, and they start at what I would term the more vanilla traditional alternatives, which are the ones that I've explained. And then there's an entire spectrum that moves down. You've got private equity, venture capital, and then, you know, you can move even further into what I would consider to be the fringe alternatives, things like art and whiskey and, you know, classic car collections, Bitcoin, and so on and so forth. But I think it's fair to say as a starting point that it's a misnomer that investing in alternatives is necessarily associated with higher degrees of risk.
Okay, so let's just talk about the really way out stuff as far as you're concerned, the art, the whiskey, and the cars. I can conceptualize an artwork. I can conceptualize a bottle of whiskey. I can conceptualize cars. What I find it hard to conceptualize in the world of alternative investments, the stuff that you're talking about, the hedge funds, and all of those sorts of assets that have got a bit of a rough reputation in the last couple of years, those seem like, you know, very, very alternative.
Correct. I mean, look, hedge funds have had a rough ride, and I suppose so too of equities, right? So the concept of a hedge fund is to be hedged on a relative basis to you know, a normal equity. But certainly, you know, hedge funds are something that is better known. Some of the other alternatives that perhaps are lesser known are lesser known because actually they are things that South Africans do all the time. Let's take a direct property acquisition as an example. You know, the very wealthy South Africans, Bruce, have been investing in direct real estate themselves for a long time. And I'm not just talking about your house. I'm talking about buying an industrial warehouse that capitalizes on the theme of COVID-19 and the move to Takealot and Amazon and online. You know, there are things like the making of a private loan to a business that you think is a quality business. You know, the world of alternatives is something that historically has been reserved for the ultra wealthy. And as a consequence, accessibility has been difficult. Now, if you look at the first world, a stat that I find fascinating, let's go to the United States or to the UK. You know, allocations to alternatives amongst institutions in 2018 in the US was up to 30% of a total portfolio. BlackRock research indicates that in 600 European portfolios, it was a 22% average allocation. In South Africa, we're just not there yet. And I think the question to discuss is, you know, if you include alternatives in your portfolio, what are the advantages? And perhaps why, as a South African society, are we not more invested in alternatives than perhaps what we could be?
Okay, before we get there, and I will get to it, I promise. I mean, just you talk about investing in warehouses and private loans to businesses, stuff that on a day like today, after 5 days that we've had, people are going to be listening to you and going, Dino, have you not been listening to Eyewitness News? Have you not been listening to The Money Show? Do you not have a social media feed? The world has gone mad. And naturally, people would be a bit apprehensive.
No, that's very true. But I think the important thing to point out, Bruce, is that if you buy, a listed property stock, you're invested in that warehouse anyway, right? You're just doing it at a level above. So the traditional markets that we've all come to understand include the fact that you've got a fund that is typically comprised of various assets that are then bought on a listed exchange. So I'm not saying for a second that alternative investing throws out the concept of good investing, which includes things like diversification and the creation of a portfolio of assets where, you know, in any mathematical circumstance, some will be good and others will be worse. All we're doing with alternatives is we're taking up some of the things that potentially are unattractive with the traditional markets. And let's use the example of what's been going on in South Africa in the last few days. As we've seen, the rand starts to blow out, exchange rates become less favorable, and as a consequence, the stock markets can struggle. Now, that may or may not be linked to what's going on at the particular asset that you're an owner of. The problem with buying something in a traditional equity is that you're subject to market fluctuations, you're subject to speculation, and you're subject really to what everybody thinks. Now, in some instances, that may be right, and in some instances, you might have bought the warehouse in Cape Town, let's say, in the area where there's been absolutely no unrest. And it's not necessarily fair to penalize your investment for something that isn't necessarily impacting you. And that's one of the advantages of alternatives, is that you are far more driven from an economics perspective by the themes that are prevalent in the asset that you own in particular, as opposed to wider market forces.
Right. In a moment, the how-to, because if you want to invest in, thank you, Dino. We'll get back to you in a second. I mean, you want to invest in something, you're jealous of people who got into Twitter before people never heard of Jack Dorsey. You heard those initial funders. The rich have got access to the stuff that you don't have access to. How jealous does that make you feel? Don't you wish you could have got in at the ground floor? Well, I think that's where Dino is taking us. More with him and that in a moment.
The Money Show. Investment School.
I think it's pretty clear that the super rich got super rich by taking risk and by investing in opportunities that aren't open to the rest of us. That's how capital begets capital. That's how wealth is created. So how then do you and I capitalize on opportunities in the markets that we don't know about? We simply never get to hear about because we don't go to the same parties. We don't have the same levels of capital. We simply are not connected. Dino Zukulo is the fund manager at Westbrook Alternative Asset Management. Tell us how we get a slice of that pie, Dino.
So Bruce, that's one of the reasons, I suppose, that allocations in South Africa to alternative assets are lower than what they are in other places in the world, is our ecosystem for investing in alternatives is certainly less evolved and less developed than potentially what it is in the first world. You know, in the first world, many of the people listening this evening will be familiar with names like Blackstone and Brookfield and KKR, big houses who've been formed with a view to providing a wider base of clients with access to the world of alternatives. Now, in South Africa, that ecosystem is a lot less developed. There are businesses such as ourselves who are on a mission to provide the South African clients with access to the world of alternatives through an access point that not only allows them to invest with someone who's trustworthy and you know, who is a brand and a household name in South African investment circles, but to do it at quantums that are lower. So the answer to your question is, to get access to alternatives, you've got to do it through someone, because obviously one of the benefits of being in a fund is that you can pool capital together, thereby as a collective having more funds available than potentially what you'd have on your own. And then you get a piece of the pie, where traditionally, obviously, the very rich South Africans were doing it all on their own.
Talk to me about protection. Talk to me about regulation, because as soon as you start talking about alternative investments, I start wondering whether or not you are registered with the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, whether the products you're building and creating have any sort of regulation. Not that that is any guarantee of success, of course, but do you fall within the regulatory framework?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the answer is it depends entirely on what it is that you're selling to clients. You know, generally speaking, there is regulation that covers the concept of marketing financial products to clients as a whole. And therefore, you'll fall under not only, the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, which will require you to register with them, but there are requirements under the Companies Act. Typically, one needs to issue a prospectus, which gets registered with the SIPC. And there may even be further levels of regulation, things like having to even register as a collective investment scheme. But, you know, the strange thing, Bruce, is that our legislation here in South Africa is not yet ready for alternatives to be taken directly to the mass market. And I'll give you an example. A collective investment scheme, by definition, is a vehicle that requires clients to be able to get liquidity on a periodic basis. And it's designed as a mechanism to protect clients. So if I've invested in something, the CIS or the Collective Investment Scheme regulation requires that within a certain period of days, I should be able to get my money back. Now, one of the things about alternatives, and some people think it's a downside and some people would argue that it's a benefit, is that they are typically illiquid because they are unlisted. So in other words, if I bought that property that I spoke about earlier or I've made that private loan, I might not necessarily be able to get my money back tomorrow if I want to. You know, these are investments that run to tenor. Now, unfortunately, under, you know, CISCA and the Collective Investment Scheme's rules in South Africa, which are designed to protect South Africans but also allow you to get access to more products as a retail investor, there isn't really a set of rules that govern this. And so it is a little bit of a legislative minefield. There absolutely is regulation, but it differs drastically depending on what you're investing in. I think the more important question is who you invest with.
Okay, so I can measure my risk as best I can. If I look at a universe of general equity unit trusts, I can have a look at it. I can look at the asset managers. I can look at the fund managers. I can look at the small universe of companies into which they invest. And I can say, you know what, I like the color of that one's eyes, and I like the way they think about investing because I heard them on the radio. That's all good. That's fine. And I can put my retirement annuity money in with those guys, for example. When it comes to alternative investments, I don't necessarily have that same comparability. I don't have that same level of risk assurance. Do I?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think the first thing, Bruce, to point out is that any well-constructed investment portfolio incorporates diversification, right? So I don't think for a second that one would ever advocate including 100% of your investments in the world of alternatives. Rather, the way I think of it is that investing in alternative assets has a place in a well-diversified client's portfolio. And, you know, your RA money might not necessarily be the bucket of capital that you want to invest in alternatives. But certainly the idea of investing in alternatives reduces potentially the level of correlation to your traditional markets and therefore could actually enhance returns. So first of all, I wouldn't include everything in what I invest in alternatives. Then when it comes down to comparability, you're 100% right that it is a lot more difficult to measure it. You can't just pull the share price graph, you know, and overlay two and see which is better. But I think there are certain common trends and commonalities that one can draw when considering investing in alternatives. Now, alternatives are naturally opaque as a consequence of the fact that they're unlisted. And so what I believe is always the best way to approach this is to take a look at who you're investing with. Ultimately, the manager with whom you are investing is the person who is the custodian for your money. Now, there are managers in this country, as they are abroad, who have been investing in alternatives for a very long time. And so it definitely isn't within the realm of what is reasonable to say to your manager before investing, look, what has your track record been like? How have you performed over the last 10 years, 5 years, 20 years, whatever the investment horizon may be, and give us examples and comfort around the types of things that you're investing in, as well as the skill of your team. And that's the best way to perhaps address that concern.
Okay. One final and quick question, and that is on cost. Notoriously, alternative investments have got much more difficult to understand fee structures. They tend to have performance targets built in. They tend to set benchmarks that are very difficult to understand. There isn't the transparency, perhaps, of the regulated market.
That's right. It's definitely true that alternative assets are more expensive. And the reason that they're more expensive is, frankly, that they require more work. You know, acquiring an equity share is a relatively easy exercise to conduct. Obviously, within the company that you're buying your share, there's a remuneration structure there. Whereas with alternatives, the remuneration is to the manager. Now, normally that takes two forms. Typically, there's an annual fee, which is an asset management fee. It's not uncommon for that to be anywhere between sort of 1% and 2% per annum, and then there's a performance fee. My advice is this: look to structures where there is a higher element of the fees that your manager would charge in the performance fee, because alternatives can, as you say, be more expensive. But it's not necessarily a problem to pay more, provided that your manager performs. And so I think the message there is that yes, alternatives are more expensive. They're expensive for good reasons. They're complex and so on. But to the extent that you put your manager's money where their mouths are and you say to them, look, guys, you can earn to the extent that you perform, I don't think there's necessarily an issue, because in my experience, when you make clients money, clients are happy to pay a fee. But it's when you don't make the money and you still charge a fee that they become a little bit less happy with you.
Dino Zukulo, thank you. He is a fund manager at Westbrook Alternative Asset Management.